It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes him off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT, and I am back in Vegas. Man, it's hot. Well, I knew that. That's why I was out of here for 12 days. Couple of weekends, and it's good to be back on the flagship of the Silver and Black Raider Nation Radio. My YouTube chat, man, look at all the people in there. Great to see everybody. You can watch the show live. You can subscribe for free at JT the Brick YT. And if you're listening on all the other platforms, thanks a lot for doing it. And there's a lot I got to catch up on. Today's a reset show. You know, I've always said this, when you've been in radio as long as I have, everybody asks me, how do you prep for the show? And I always say, well, and I'm always on the radio, so I don't have to worry about that. When I go to bed, I know the score. I wake up in the morning, they don't play many new games, and I'm always prepped up. And when you're away for a couple of weeks or a week and a half, you kind of got to hit the reset button, get going again. This is the dead zone. This is it. This is the moment where there's no football, no basketball, other than Summer League. We love Summer League. We're broadcasting live from Summer League on Thursday. I'll be live from the Thomas and Mack. But no games for baseball, football, basketball, and hockey. Oh, boy. So that's the dead zone when it comes off the American Century. Golf, the Celebrity Golf Tournament, and Home Run Derby, and the Baseball All-Star Game. And I'm a big Baseball All-Star guy. I grew up with it. I love it. I'll tell stories. I just went to Yankee Stadium on this trip. I saw a win. They never win. I saw a great game. I saw a dominant game. I'm excited about that. Today is Sebastian Janikowski Day. So as you told, we told you summertime radio, in order to get us through training camp and part of training camp, we're going to pick 1 to 2 players a day that were drafted by the Raiders who are Raider all-time draft picks. Today, it's Sebastian Janikowski. So here's how I'd like you to participate, because I can't talk 2 hours on Sebastian Janikowski. I can, but I'd rather not. I'd rather hear from you. So if you want to get in the chat, if you want to come on Twitter, X at JT the Brick, I'd appreciate a couple calls per show. We don't have to have them, but they make the show better. 702-365-9200. Tell a Janikowski story from the day he was drafted to his epic kicks, what he meant to you as a Raider fan. I guarantee a lot of people met him. You've met Janikowski. You hung out. You might have drank with him. You might have had a cerveza or a vodka with him. So that's what we're doing today. I might get another player in. We're going to have to get to 2-a-days coming up. And then here at the end of the summer, we're going to rank the top 10 Raider draft picks of all time from 10 to 1. So it's a big task. And Bobby's doing some work, and he's trying to get this thing moving along. And, that's what we're going to do this week as we're here ready to roll. So that's what I want to get to. I want to begin. I lost a dear friend, one of my best friends, Raider Mort, passed away. And unfortunately, I could not get back for it because I had this trip planned with my family, my parents. Raider Mort was like a brother to me. When we found out the passing as I was away and the details of it, which were very uncomfortable for me, it took a piece of me. It really did. It took an absolute piece of my heart and a piece of me. He's one of the closest confidants I've ever had when it came to Raider Nation. He is the encyclopedia of Raider Nation. He's in the Visa NFL Hall of Fame, the Fans Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. I lived with him. He came to my wedding. I sat with him. I tailgated with him at every game I ever went to in Oakland. I saw Mort and hung out with him. And he called my radio shows for 25 years until he was ill near here the end of his life. So I didn't expect this. Obviously, you never expect it. The end of Mort's life was very difficult. For those who know, they know. I'll keep a lot of that private. But what we're going to do is on Wednesday, we're going to do a complete 2-hour tribute show for Raider Mort. I want to thank the Raiders who put out a beautiful commentary on his passing. They put that up on the website, and the Raiders did that with Black Hole Rob. They reached out to me in both instances. It meant a lot to me and my family. And if you know me, you know Raider Mort. If you know me on the radio, you know Raider Mort and the impact that he had on my life and he had on your life. And from the black hole to all the fans who ever went to a game in Oakland, it's just a shame. I thought Mort was going to outlive us all. I really thought he was set. His DNA was set for him to live till he was 100 plus years old. God took him. For those, a few of our friends went to his celebration of life, his, you know, passing. And again, it cripples me that I wasn't able to attend, but I'll do my part here. And Mort will never be forgotten. So I'm going to do a monologue on Wednesday, which I'm preparing now. We're going to have some special guests that day. And hopefully if you want to call in on Mort, you can call in today or anytime you want. But that'll be a special show for him on Wednesday. When someone very important to you passes away and there's a connection to radio, they deserve more than a few minutes. They deserve a lot. So Raider Mort, rest in peace. And I'm sure I'm going to get very emotional on Wednesday when the flooding of emotions come in. God, he was a good friend. I mean, I take honor in the fact that I was just back east with my friends from first grade. Guys I was in first grade with who were my best friends. And Mort broke the code and got in there with my friends. And I considered him one of my best friends. So, you know, you look at the people that the Raiders have lost from a fan perspective. Raider fans die every day. Every day a Raider fan dies. And if someone does, let me know about it and put their name out there, he or she, so we can do that. So kind of bummed out that I came back. And I had the news when I was out there back east. I was actually in Boston when I got the news at a dinner, and I had to leave and head back to where I was staying. It really hit me. So I hope everybody can help me out on Wednesday because I'm going to need your help as we pay tribute to Mort. Raider Mort, one of the greatest and most impactful Raider fans to ever live, period. And everybody who knew him would say that about him. Gone too soon. All right, a lot of other things I want to get to here. Again, Sebastian Janikowski will be the focus of the show starting at the bottom of the hour. I'll go through the history of Seabass, some of the stories. We have a little bit of sound here. And jump on in on that. If you want to start dialing and get in here now, I have limited time today. If you got a good Janikowski story, 702-365-9200. And sound off like you got a pair. Why Janikowski today? That was interesting. Here's why. He's not in my top 10, but he's close. Like, you can sit here and debate Sebastian Janikowski. Impact. Now, he didn't win a Super Bowl, but he kicked in a Super Bowl. At one point, he had the longest kick in NFL history, leading scorer in Raider history. At one point, he had a lot of things going. But he was a character, too. He was a massive character, unique person. And when you think of the Raiders, in any era, Janikowski could have played for the Raiders in 1960, and he could have played for them today. He's the ultimate Raider. So we're going to spend some time talking about him and the impact that he had overall. I got some vacation stories to share via sports, from a sports perspective, as we jump in. NBA Summer League, Cooper Flagg in two games, averaging over 20 points a game. I'm looking at some of the highlights now. As he had his coming out party, which is always good. Dylan Harper had 16 points in that game as he went to the Spurs, and Dallas came out with that. So Summer League is very important this time of year. It's a big part of our economy here in Vegas as we roll on with that. So I want to dive into that. And then from a current Raiders perspective with the team, and as the team is now, I talk a lot of Raiders. I stayed at my buddy's house, which was an estate. Yeah, name dropping there on Long Island. His son was home, and his son's friends were home, and they were, you know, testing me on Raider and this and that. They're gamblers. They wanted to ask me, these young guys, what's the over-under on Ashton Gentry's rushing attempts, props, and all this. I just said, like I tell everybody, Raiders are going to be good this year. Raiders are going to be very good this year. The question is, how many games are they going to win? And we are counting down to rookies reporting before the veterans report, and then the preseason jumps on us with three preseason games that we'll dive into. Three preseason games. I'll be calling them on the radio. We're going to be doing a lot out there over at the Raiders. The Raiders are going to be hosting us, and fans and radio shows are going to be out there, so that's going to be fun, even though you're going to have to thread the needle with the heat out there for everybody to see what the Raiders are going to do. And overall, I'll dive into a little bit later on in the show. I watched the documentary series Peyton Manning's on quarterback, on the three quarterbacks on Netflix, which was Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, and Joe Burrow. And I think I'll be able to tie that together for Geno Smith. A couple of people were asking me about Jack Besh. His contract isn't done yet. All the second-round picks are holding out. All those picks are holding out because some knucklehead gave one player guaranteed money. And now everybody wants guaranteed money if you're a second-round pick, and you do not deserve guaranteed money. You deserve a signing bonus, which could be a lot of money and a contract, but you're not getting it all guaranteed because you might not be good, and you might get your ass cut. Not Jack Besh, but there have been second-round picks who didn't play and second-round picks who didn't make the team or weren't on the team next year. So we're not giving these guys all guaranteed money. Okay, Kirk Cousins is the architect of that. They did it to Deshaun Watson with his $230 million guaranteed. Not everybody gets guaranteed money, period. And for that holdout there, I don't think that's going to be a big story. I've interviewed Jack a handful of times, and wow, what a special young player he is. So we'll dive into that a little bit later on in the show. Baseball at the All-Star break. All the teams, Dodgers, Yankees, Bobby's Red Sox. So I'll start off with this story, Bobby. So part of my trip, so we were supposed to fly out two Tuesdays from the past on a red eye. So I'm sitting at home in Vegas, and I've had some really bad luck traveling, man. Not bad luck because the planes have all landed. Bad luck is when your plane doesn't land, or so you know what I mean. But I've had some trips lately, man, that have been a horror show. So we're sitting home Tuesday during the day, and we're taking the red eye at 9:45 at night to head to Boston. My wife never been to Boston, and she's traveled a lot. And I said, let's go to Boston. I'm kind of juiced up in Boston, know some people there. We'll go have fun. So we get the tickets to the Red Sox game on Wednesday. They are on the third base line, on the line, not two rows back. Front row, third base, where Pete Rose slid in head first. Remember the iconic Pete Rose slide against the Red Sox? I was going to be sitting 15 feet away from there and had a good lunch reservation that day. I'm sitting at home all day, and all of a sudden the flight delays start coming on the phone. I'm like, come on, man. We're taking a red eye. What's going on? That's when all the light poles here in Vegas were flying to the ground. It looked like the Wizard of Oz. Where next thing you know, we never have wind until JT's flying, and we had wind. So the flight started delaying. So our 9:45 flight to Boston, 9:45 Pacific, ended up, it was going to take off at about 2 in the morning. But at least it was going to take off. I was still going to get to Boston. So we pack up the car. My son's getting ready. My wife comes out of the garage and gives me the throat slash sign, flight's canceled. I'm like, really? Yeah, flight's canceled. So we lost half a day in Boston, didn't get a chance to go to the Red Sox game. Bobby, I'm tying that up because since that game, the Red Sox have not lost. They've won 10 in a row. So that will be my way to you, the curse of JT, in a good way for you. So I missed going to Fenway Park, but we were around Fenway. We had a good time. I went to Boston for 2 days. Boston, Bobby, was immaculate. Immaculate. We were there on the 4th of July. That's the only day of the year where the USS Constitution, our oldest naval ship, our oldest, number one, Old Ironside, sails. And I got a chance to see it sail. Went on the Freedom Trail, Paul Revere's house, Bunker Hill, all the things you go when you're there. And the restaurants on the North End were spectacular. Better than New York. The Little Italy in Boston, better than New York. Had some nice meals there, and then had a good time. Then went to the fireworks, the Boston Pops, on the Charles River, which I've never done before. I did the Statue of Liberty once. I went to the fireworks there, and it was just breathtaking that we were there, threaded that needle. And then we rented a car and then drove to New York and went and saw my parents in New Paltz, New York, and saw my folks for a couple days, had a beautiful time in light upstate New York. It's not upstate New York, but did a lot there with my sister and my brother-in-law and my nephews. And then we spend 7 days on Long Island, you know, on the beaches and the North Shore of Long Island. Went to the Yankee game. The Yankees won. Bellinger hit 3 home runs. Should have been 4. One was robbed going over the wall. So I saw the Yankees win, so I wasn't cranky Yankee. I got a good story to tell you about. Maybe the best pregame I've ever been to. And it was at Yankee Stadium, and I'm a Yankee fan. I didn't even know it existed. I'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. And then I flew home yesterday back to Vegas and had a beautiful flight home. And on the entire flight, I watched Netflix's Quarterbacks, the whole thing, the whole series from 1 through 7 or 8, how many episodes that was. So I felt like that got my mind back to talk football. And I wanted to tie in the Netflix documentary series to Geno, because Geno Smith was in Miami working out, in South Florida, exactly, working out with a couple of people out there. I got some good information, intel on that that I'll keep to myself. And there's a whole bunch of lists going out today. We are in the list moment in sports radio. Oh, God, yes, we are. What happens is even the producers are allowed to take time off, right? Even the people who build the radio shows and don't host it need a vacation. So the associate producers and the backups, all they do is they go on AI and they put together lists. And Geno's not on any list. And I'm like, wow, Geno's not on any list? What do you mean? I think I saw him on one for accuracy, right? So I'm starting to look at these lists, and they have a thing on X now, Twitter, that you can bookmark these tweets and hold them, and they just build up. So I bookmark everything that has the top 10, because David Letterman came up with a top 10 list, and now everybody does it. And Geno's pretty much nowhere to be found on the top 10 list. But he should be because of his accuracy, his yards, and the fact that he's won more games in the last three seasons combined, three seasons in a row, than Matthew Stafford and Joe Burrow. So Geno can't find his way on a list. But I got to be careful, because last year I got my head lopped off because I came on the show every day saying, Raiders aren't getting any respect. Raiders aren't on any list. And how did that work out? Raiders lost 10 in a row. Coach got fired. Raiders were out of it, non-competitive. They were competitive in some games, but in the big picture, they weren't very competitive and had a total regime change. Now, there's not going to be a regime change anytime soon. We got a pretty good group. Met Tom Brady at his Hall of Excellence. Pete Carroll, fantastic coach, total track record guy. John Spytek, no doubt about it, right guy at the right time. It seems like everybody thinks they had a really good draft, right? Ashton Jeanty and all of that. But I think we're going to do a lot of Geno in the preseason. And it's too early to get to this topic. I'm going to wait till the week of the game. But how much does Geno need to play? Ooh, yeah. I'm going to be careful with this one because John Spytek doesn't know me well and Coach Carroll doesn't know me well. And I'm not going to be a lightning rod on telling them who they should play and when they should play. Especially, I'll be in the meetings with them, so I'm going to kind of tread lightly on that one. But last year, our quarterbacks weren't ready to play. Yeah, I apologize. I didn't do a better job last year in Costa Mesa on that topic. But I told you whatever I could tell you. Wink, wink. And that was that Max was wrecking every practice. Every time he turned the corner, he knocked the ball down. And we were trying to prepare Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. Remember him? And there was no Colt Miller and there was no Jackson Powers Johnson all at camp. What a disaster that was, looking back on it. Antonio Pierce deserved better than that. He actually did, because he went there to work. He went there to work. They worked. They went to the beach here and there. They did some team bonding. Guy Fieri cooked for him. But, you know, even Devontae left because his wife was going to give birth. So he bolted out of camp for a decent amount of time, considering other players in the same scenario. But he deserved to be with his family there. No regrets there. And then, as Snow Raider is saying in the chat, should have started AOC game one. I still disagree on that. I think the veteran Gardner Minshew was a tad bit better in training camp. I mean, if you really thought that AOC should have started game one, you have no reason to say that because AOC did not look good in camp, because I just told you camp, the offense did nothing in camp. I thought Zamir White would be good. How'd that turn out? So last year in camp, the offense actually did nothing. Nothing. I mean, I'm sure there's some things that were good that happened. The coaches coached, the players played, but nothing significant happened. We went to Minneapolis. That's the game that J.J. McCarthy got hurt, but no one knew. And we were sitting there trying to debate in the preseason who was better, Gardner Minshew or AOC. Neither one of them played well, so neither one of them deserved the job over the other. Minshew got it because Tom Telesco paid him $15 million to come on in to start. You didn't have to pay Gardner Minshew that much money. He was paid that much money, which is fine. The Raiders needed a quarterback. That was the market for Gardner Minshew. He was going to play. And if you remember, the Raiders were 2-2. And the Raiders beat Baltimore in Baltimore. All right? So they paid. Gardner Minshew looked really good against Lamar Jackson and got the job. But how much better do we have it this year? I mean, God, Geno Smith so far looks fantastic in everything that we've seen. Really does. And we know that Aiden's a really good backup and could start. If we ever have to break the glass and go to Aiden, every single Raider fan will be confident that Aiden can win any game, including at Kansas City, at the Chargers, home, whatever. You'll go into that game saying we can win this game with Aiden O'Connell, especially if Ashton Gentry's running for 160 yards in that game. But for Geno Smith, I'm not going to be the ringleader on it. What is that called? You know, I'm going to excuse myself from this issue here. And when it comes from, you know, defer, whatever word you want to recuse myself, thank you, recuse myself from this. I am not going to be the crazy JT from last year screaming and yelling in the preseason. That's not going to be me. No, not because I'm a year older. It has nothing to do with that. I'm a year younger, actually, because I'm doing stuff that I was doing when I was 17 right now, it seems like. But I'm going to wait for the Geno momentum to build. I don't know how much you play him, man. I was talking to Bobby about that before the show. I don't know what you do with Geno. It's the preseason. You got three games instead of four. He's definitely going to play in one of them, I would think. There's some quarterbacks who play in none of them. I repeat, none. We're not in that boat. We got to get Geno some reps. Got to get Aiden some reps. But Geno has got to hit the ground running, because we open up at New England and we get the Chargers for the home opener on Monday Night Football. Geno's better than Drake May. Blindfolded, he's better than Drake May. And Geno, at home, he better beat Herbert. Right? This is Geno's house now. He's got to beat Herbert. And we've beaten Herbert before in our house, but we got to win that game. So Geno, according to KC, who's in the chat, Geno playing under Pete eliminates learning curves. They know each other, and it should be seamless. No, he's playing for Pete Carroll, but he's playing for Chip Kelly. And everything that I've learned in my life when it comes to Chip Kelly, he's got a pretty elaborate offense. Pretty elaborate, all right? I'm not saying the book is as thick as Gruden's. And, the terminology of Gruden is really intense. But when it comes to what's happening, Geno and Chip Kelly, it's very important that they hit training camp running. I'm looking forward to days of training camp before I got to get on the show at noon. If I'm there to watch a half hour or 20 minutes or an hour of practice, there's got to be some days where Geno is outperforming Max Crosby in the defense. Because it always happens in the preseason at practice. The defense is ahead of the offense, obviously. The defense knows, get to the quarterback. Put your hands up, get to the quarterback. Pretty simple task. The quarterback never played with the rookies, never played with the wide receivers. It's going to take some time. So the defense is normally ahead, but Geno's going to have to get up to speed very quickly here. That's the monologue, brought to you by PTs. They fuel the monologue. Best happy hour in town, 5 to 7, midnight to 2. I feel good right there. That's a good monologue. Now we got to get the phones going. God, I should write a book. Where Are the Phones in the Summer? Written by me. It'd be a bestseller at Barnes & Noble. It would be. It'd be that thick. Where is everybody in the summer? Well, I was gone. I can't make an excuse. I was gone. Thanks to Vinny and everybody else who filled in to the shift while I was gone. Now I'm back. We got a good week of radio. And when we come back, we're going to dive into the career of Sebastian Janikowski. The callers today call in on Janikowski. What do you remember about him? How do you rank him as a Raider? We'll look at his draft career, what he did as a draft pick, his overall, I think, impact on the Silver and Black with Al Davis and Mark Davis. So we're going to celebrate Seabass today. I might get to a player. I'm definitely getting to Shane Leckler this week. I'm getting to Pete Banaszak this week, one of my favorite Raiders of all time. Maybe Reggie Kinlaw or Rod Martin, but one of them I might have in the top 10. So I can't, that would be too big of a clue. If I went with one, you know the others in the top 10. I don't want to do that yet. Hammer the like button if you're on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, I got the machine up and running today. JT the Brick, YT. Wimbledon, we had a great match at Wimbledon. I'll reset the baseball standings. A little knowledge on Summer League. I'll be at Summer League on Thursday. And we got a good week lined up. Yeah, Kenny, you did hear Pete Banaszak, number 40. You got a lot going on today. Let's get the phones moving today on Seabass. 702-365-9200. Our great friends, the Black Hole. They're a big part of what I'm doing this summer. Man, the Black Hole's got an announcement every day. Go to theblackhole.com and become a lifetime member.
Over the next few weeks of summer, JT will look back at the most influential Raiders draft picks in the history of this storied franchise.
With the 13th pick, the Las Vegas Raiders select
the players only drafted by the Raiders who played in the most important games and also had lasting impacts on the NFL.
Yeah, that's what we're doing here this summer. So we're going to do that, and we're going to take a look back at all the players, the elite players or the great players or the impactful players. The most difficult part about this summertime radio project, because we all want to do a good job, is what is the definition of impact? Well, impact is Super Bowls, Pro Bowls, All-Pro, Hall of Fame. I mean, that's impactful to me, but there are a number of players on this list who are not going to go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame that had an impact. And I think one of them is Sebastian Janikowski. Now, Sebastian Janikowski is one of my favorite Raiders because I believe I have a role in this. Not in any decision to bring him here, but I had a role in the beginning of his career because I saw it. I was the first one to read his draft card. I got to know him a little bit. He was a hard guy to get to know because there was a language barrier early. You know, Sebastian Janikowski from Poland, it was great. He was born March 2nd, 1978 in Poland. He's currently 47 years old. Primarily played for the Raiders. He had a great college career at Florida State and was selected 17th overall in the 2000 NFL draft by the Raiders and Al Davis. He's one of only five NFL kickers to be selected in the first round of the NFL draft. That's impactful. He's the Raiders' all-time leading scorer and appeared in more games with the franchise than any other player. He also tied the then-NFL record for the longest successful field goal at 63, which is the fourth longest in league history because now it's just with the domes and some of the way the balls are flying, you're going to see a 70-yard kick coming up here pretty soon. But I think it's really interesting if you look back that his father was a professional soccer player and they moved to the United States in the early 80s and he ended up playing because they emigrated from Poland, which was a big deal. His parents divorced. His dad married an American citizen and Janikowski began to excel at soccer when he was 15. He had a spot on the Polish under-17 team. And if you cover soccer and you know the sport, that's a really big deal. So he was an elite soccer player as a young boy, elite, and could have been a professional soccer player. And then he was able to legally immigrate to the United States, spoke very limited English, lived in Orlando, Florida with his father and stepmother. And he joined a under-19 soccer club, the Orlando Lions. And he became kind of famous because people knew who this kid was from Poland. And then the next thing you know, he got on the radar. He attended Florida State under Bobby Bowden. Are you kidding me? Bowden once said, "Boy, have you ever thought about how many national championships we might have won if we had Janikowski every year of my career?" Because if you remember Florida State, over the decades, they missed a lot of kicks. Big kicks in national championship games. Bobby Bowden had the problem with the kicker. In 1999, he won the Lou Groza Award for the second time in a row, given annually to the top collegiate kicker. Currently, when he retired, he was the only player to win the award 2 years consecutively. And he was very powerful because his kickoffs back then would go through the uprights of the end zone, which I've seen him do as a professional player. And that's where he got the nickname Seabass. Now, he had some bumps in the roads. He got in a little bit of trouble from time to time. Didn't we all in college? Right? You know, I've looked at this. I prepared his bio for the show today. But he was a hell of a player. Prior to the team's appearance in the national championship game, which was the 2000 Sugar Bowl, he declared his intention to be available for that upcoming draft, and it made national news. Now, that's when he got on my radar, because I was watching college football. I was intrigued with this story. I had no idea the Raiders were going to draft him. How could I? No one. And it was an interesting story because he had a little bit of, not a checkered past, but he was arrested one time and charged $5,000 with a fine. You know, he had some issues. And people were wondering, what kind of player would you want to bring into your program? But Bobby Bowden knew he was a great kid. And then the rest is history as the Raiders selected him in the draft. Here's the audio of Sebastian Janikowski coming to the NFL.
It's an interesting scene up in the crowd with Raider fans standing next to Jet fans. Boy, are those been around from the days when I used to sit at Shea Stadium. Let's go to the podium.
With the 17th choice in the NFL Draft 2000, the Oakland Raiders select Sebastian Janikowski, kicker, Florida State.
Drafted Ray Guy in the first round at punter, and he went on to be arguably the best punter ever. I mean, when they've done it right, and here he is, Ray Guy, the coffin corners, the hang time. He was a good athlete. Now this guy, Janikowski, is a little bit bigger than Ray Guy. Mel, how many kickers have we seen this side of Lou Groza or Tom Dempsey that are 260 pounds?
Go back to Russell Erksleben, 11th overall pick to the Saints. He's not able to fulfill that kind of potential in the National Football League. I think if you look at Sebastian Janikowski, the ability to drive those kickoffs deep into the end zone, alter field position, hit the 56-yard field goal, and what he gets, even on the 40-yard field goal, that great lift, the elevation, negates the chance of blocking that field goal. So he's going to be a weapon. How he adapts to the pro game is going to be interesting because it's a difference, Joe. Coming from college to pro, you're moving 5 yards back on the kickoff, different football. How does he adapt? Some of the other kickers did not adapt very well.
Before I jump it, we just asked what player could they draft to win the close games. They just got him.
Well, take into consideration, the Raiders lost 8 football games by a total of 33 points this year. They understand the importance of the kicking game.
And we're seeing the lift here, Joe, in terms of the kickoffs and the ability to negate the return skills of that kickoff return man. And remember, what does the kickoff into the end zone do? Well, you start at the 20, that's great. You also limit the number of, you negate injuries. Injuries on kick coverage, they happen. You have to put some of your players that are going to be in your starting lineup on kick coverage. Janikowski drives that ball deep in and out of the end zone. Playoff position, saving injuries, what a weapon he can be.
Mel, I was at the Sugar Bowl this year. I had a chance to stand on the sidelines next to this young man.
I've been meaning to talk to you about those
throws. About my throwing ability, yeah, it wasn't very good, I'll be honest with you.
All right, I thought that was great sound that Bobby found. I mean, I didn't know that even existed. Sebastian Janikowski in the analysis of what happened the moment he was drafted. So Janikowski is our player today. Let's wake some people up and tell some Jano stories. 702-365-9200. If you saw him play, if you loved him as a Raider, if you wore his jersey, someone out there, get us going on this. I will tell you, one of my memories was when he was drafted in 2000. I anchored the draft on the radio with George Atkinson and Artie Gigantino. David Hum was back here in Vegas. And I'll never forget this because we actually anchored it from Alameda right outside the Raiders' war room. And what I mean by that is Mr. Davis's war room with the team in Oakland. We were down the hall. And we got a pretty high pick, right? So we're going through the draft. And that was back in the day where we were the guys on the radio for the draft. Now, we don't have that. We just cover the draft, and we take the feed of the draft, which is fine, and then we do the analysis of it. They handed me the card. I remember vividly showing the card to Sebastian Janikowski, to Artie Gigantino, who was a special teams coach. And he was aware of him, and George Atkinson. And George looked at it kind of like, looked back at me like, what is this? And I got the name right. I was, if you looked at the card the way I did, a lot of people would have fumbled that one. I knew who he was because I watched college football, Sebastian Janikowski. And we talked about it, and we couldn't believe it. It turned out to be a good pick. Now, a lot of people said, and I'm not going to dive into that draft, you couldn't have got Janikowski, in my opinion, would have been drafted in the third round or the second round. Someone would have took him. Mr. Davis took him for the right reasons. He needed a scorer. He scores points, more points than a quarterback, receiver, or running back. He is a goal scorer. And Janikowski lived up to that. He played in a Super Bowl. He struggled as a rookie. He had all 46 of his extra points as a rookie, but in his rookie year, he was 68.8 as field goal attempts. But remember, they were launching him and telling him to come out there and kick some big ones. In 2004, he was given a five-year contract extension, at the time worth $10.5 million. At the time, that was the highest-paid kicker in NFL history. And in February of 2010, think of this, he signed again in 2004, 2010, he signed another contract for $16 million over 4 years, including $9 million guaranteed. That was the most ever guaranteed money for a place kicker in NFL history. So that was really good. The big kick that he made against Denver for 63 yards. Now, a lot of people brought up to me, and a couple people hit it up on Twitter, was the unsuccessful attempt of 76 yards against the Chargers into a heavy win right before halftime. I really believe that that did in Lane Kiffin with Al Davis. That was a horrific decision at the time to do that. He had no chance of making that kick. I thought it was an embarrassing moment. I didn't think that shined well on Lane Kiffin at the time for asking him to do that. But the 63-yarder on September 12, 2001, in the rainy first half about the Denver Broncos came to a close. I remember that like it was yesterday and how big of a kick that was. It tied the NFL record by Tom Dempsey in 1970 and Jason Elam in 1998. And then afterwards, that record's been broken. You know, he went to a bunch of Pro Bowls. He was a second team All-Pro. And again, Janikowski was one hell of a Raider. He ended his career. He signed a one-year contract with Seattle, and he won the Seahawks starting kicking job after the team released Jason Myers in 2018. And Janikowski had a couple of big games with them overall. But, you know, he was a good guy, a really good player. I got a couple of stories to tell about him. Want to hear from you, 702-365-9200. We're not a podcast, we're a talk show. And I picked Janikowski today coming off vacation because I figured that would be a kick through the goalpost and get everybody going there. So more on Sebastian Janikowski, the impact he had. Get some interesting stories to tell about him from a firsthand perspective that I have, which I'm sure you might know a little bit about. We'll tell you that on the other side. Hey, I talked to Mike over at La Casa Cigars and Lounge, just about to open. So his cigar lounge, one of the best you've ever been to, is right next door, but they expanded it. and it looks incredible in Tivoli Village, we will do a live broadcast from there. Not the day it opens, but at some point this summer, we're going to come in there big and do a broadcast there. So go get ready. Check it out. La Casa Cigars and Lounge. They'll be back pretty soon. Could be as early as this week. And I will be there. I had a bunch of cigars on this trip. Oh, had a bunch of cigars. Good ones from Boston down to Long Island. It was great. Who's going to be my first Sebastian Janikowski caller of the day as we open up the show live from Vegas, looking back at the most impactful Raider draft picks of all time?
We were watching in warm-ups. Janikowski was hitting them from 55, 60
yards. Wait a minute, he's bringing Janikowski out.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, hold on. Let's start to do the math on this. This would be 76 yards. This wouldn't only be the all-time record.
The wind.
This would completely shatter it.
Wind is in his face.
76 yards into the wind. Unimaginable. With a three-step start for a little NFL history. Leckler on the hold. Janikowski hits it as hard as he can. It's not even going to make it to the goal line. This can be returned. Remember, Cromartie did this. He's going to act like he's just kind of half-loafing, trying to seduce that defense.
Yeah, that wasn't smart to make Seabass attempt the 76-yarder. I don't think Mr. Davis was thrilled at Lane Kiffin at the time with that. JT, back with you. You heard the DiCastroVerde Law Group. Hope you don't need them, but you might. You might, because it's chaos driving in this town. Cones are out. See, the cones are everywhere. If you get into an accident and are injured, the brothers win. The brothers have your back. Brotherswin.com, the DiCastroVerde Law Group, 702-222-9999. So I'll get into more. I'll give you my story on Janikowski at the top of the hour in New Orleans with some commentary from John Gruden, some audio that we have on that that will tie that story in together. We're looking back at the top Raider draft picks this summer of all time and the impact that they had. I think Sebastian Janikowski had a really big impact on Raider Nation. Raider 66, kind enough to join us. He's always good on these topics. Go ahead.
Hey, JT, how you doing today?
Great, my friend. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, a lot of my friends, when this happened, they were like, the Raiders aren't really going to draft a kicker in the first round, are they? They can't be that crazy. And I'm like, yeah. I believed before it was ever done that they were going to do it. Because if you remember, JT, the year before, 1999, the Raiders finished 8-8. It was John Gruden's second year. And they had a lot of problems with the kicking game. They lost several games because the kicks didn't get made. And so they needed to revamp the kicking game. And this kid coming out of Florida State, they say you could tell the difference when he kicked it. It sounded like a cannon shot. So I knew that they were going to draft him. And later on in that same draft, they drafted a punter by the name of Shane Leckler. Those two guys, I think Janikowski was the next to last guy from that draft to retire. A kid by the name of Tom Brady held out and lasted a few years longer. But my disappointment with the draft pick of Janikowski was that when they drafted him, I was certain that one of these years when they were playing in Denver, they would have a shot at giving him a chance for the record. In that thin air with his leg, he could have done one over 70 yards. I don't know about 76, the Charger one, but I'm thinking 70, 72 would have been very reachable in that thin air. And I kept waiting for them to do that free kick situation at the end of the half or the end of the game, you know, because in that instance, you don't have any rushers. You don't have any, you can take a little bit farther step. And that was just tailor-made for him. And that was my big disappointment. Also, he was the master of the long-distance field goal. He made, I believe it was like 58 of 50 or more yards. That was an NFL record at the time. Justin Tucker recently tied it. But, yeah, my thing with Janikowski, I knew he was going to be picked, and it didn't surprise me one bit. I was just disappointed that he didn't get the shot at kicking 170-plus. Thanks for the time, JT.
I agree with you. I think Janikowski could have made a 70-yard kick, especially in the prime of his career in Denver, in Oakland, anywhere. But those who say, you know, the wind and all that, I get it. A dome would have been the best place to do it, right in a dome, but he had the powerful leg to do it. He was a weapon. And I've been very happy with Daniel Carlson. I have been. I think Daniel Carlson's a good kicker in this league. He is a good kicker. But kickers come and go. I mean, it's hard to find a kicker and have him on your team for a long time. And if you want to make the Leckler comparison, Leckler, Janikowski, A.J. Cole from coming in here and earning a spot, Carlson came from another team, but it's nice to have two guys that you know can win games. I am a big believer in having a great kicker, and here's why. You got to score points in this league. And if you've heard me over the decades on the pregame show, I always throw out the number nine. Nine's a very important number. It's my favorite number. Different story. We got to get 9 points from our kicker in every game. And here's what I mean by this. We need 3 touchdowns, which are 3 extra points. That's 3. And I need 2 field goals. That's it. I get 9. Now, it's hard. This team doesn't score in the past. If you look at the Raiders over the last couple of years, we don't score. When you score 17 points a game, it means you're not kicking field goals and you're not scoring touchdowns. We got to get back to it. So for those, and I know Fabian likes to bring it up and others who say -4, you want to get a touchdown, you get a field goal. That's a 4-point differential. I don't freak out about that because I want the 3. I can live with the 3. Now, if it's first and goal on the 3 and we don't score, yeah, that bothers me a lot. If we're in the red zone and we don't score, it bothers me. But when you have a kicker, when you get over midfield in this generation that we're living in, you got to get 3 points, man. And you're going to get some extra points. They should be automatic. They moved it back to make it a little bit. And as Big D points in our chat, how did Adam Vinatieri not get in the Hall of Fame with Eric Allen, first ballot? How the hell did that happen? Adam Vinatieri is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and they made him wait. Really? That was shocking to me. When we come back, more audio on Sebastian Janikowski, your call, 702-365-9200. And I got a good New Orleans story to tell about Seabass.